So we are going to start the next part of this mindfulness for young adult session. So actually, we are going to start a new series because we have spent a fair amount of time discussing Muni Sutta, and today we are going to the next sutta in the series. And this is a very popular sutta and quite interesting one, and most of you are familiar with it. And maybe most of you are reciting it, and that is called Ratana Sutta. So typically we think that this is available in the Pirit Pota, the chanting book, or the Paritta chanting book. But actually, Paritta chanting book seems to be a later compilation taking very interesting suttas, powerful suttas, available in the canon. So this is actually available in the, what you call, in the Sutta Nipata. And in this Sutta Nipata, so this Sutta is actually put after Muni Sutta. So this again is a very interesting one, and the introduction, as an introduction, why this has happened. So probably you all have heard about it. There was one occasion, the city of Vaisali was afflicted with three kinds of, we can say, fears. One thing is a famine. There is no enough food, particularly for the poor people, and most of them are as a result of going through a lot of suffering, and they started dying as a result of famine. And then those deceased ones' corpses were gathering, and then some evil spirits start associating. So then kind of non-human beings started gathering, so that becomes another fear. And as many corpses are gathering and these situations are further improving, so it starts another kind of pestilence, kind of a plague, starts spreading. So now the whole city is afflicted with these three fears: famine, non-human beings, and the pestilence. Now at that time, certain people are talking, what are we going to do? And some suggested that the king is not righteous, so this could be one reason, strong reason, main reason why this kind of a plague might has happened. So they complained to the king. Actually, the kings are a group of kings called Lichavis. And so once the civilians complained to Lichavis, so they actually sort of humbly want to rectify if there is any kind of a mistake if they are doing, continuing. So they get together and start the discussion, and whatever the people are also participated. But they found there is no such kind of a wrongdoing happening from the king's side. So they all are doing something good. So it's actually a kind of a union between many kings. And they all are doing their best. And so they found it is not because of their any kind of wrongdoing. So then some suggested, okay, let's invite certain teachers to the city so that we would be able to overcome this problem as a result of their arrival. Some suggested various different teachers, and some suggested the Buddha. So at that time, Buddha was living in Rajagaha, and King Bimbisara was attending him, and King Bimbisara himself has become a follower of the Buddha. So Buddha has become one of the famous spiritual teacher. So there were many suggestions coming from the Vaisali people. So let's invite Buddha to the city. So then they decided, okay, let's invite the Buddha to the city. But there was a problem that because now King Bimbisara is the one who is attending, so he might not agree to this decision or agree to this invitation. So what they did was they prepared two kings and given them full authority, even adorned them. And they, as messengers, went to King Bimbisara and sort of pleaded, requested from King Bimbisara to help, to invite the Buddha to the city of Pesa. Then King Bimbisara said, I mean, if Buddha agrees, then I will provide all the necessary support. So you people better go and invite the Buddha. And then they understood, okay, there is no any objection from the king. And he too is a righteous king. And then they met the Buddha and they put the invitation. And Buddha understood that his arrival to the city would be a blessing to the whole civilians and the plague would be expelled. And therefore he decided to participate in this event, to visit the Pesagi. So at that moment, then after the information or the indication given to the King Bimbisara, he said, okay, Bhante, there are two arrangements to be done. So please give me a couple of days. So from Rajagaha to Vesali, I need to prepare the road. Let me prepare the road. And then after the completion, I will inform you. And then the king did like that and he prepared the road very beautifully, all with a ceremonial way. And he too participated in a parade. And then there was a crossing of the river. And there also he prepared the ships. And through them, actually Buddha has crossed the river. And now King Bimbisara, being a very devoted king, a faithful follower of the Buddha, so he actually followed the Buddha and mentioned, so we'll simply stay here at this shore till Bhante return, till the Buddha return and the Sangha return. So it's an interesting way of looking at things. So he being a very devoted, faithful follower of the Buddha, he being the king and he is the one attending the Buddha and he has a great trust with the Buddha. He actually is a Sotapanna. And so we can see how humble, how faithful and how devoted he is. And he prepared everything to the Buddha and the Sangha and give fullest support. Now after Buddha very much went to the other shore, to the Vesali, then King Bimbisara is waiting at this end, waiting till Buddha returns. And now Buddha, as he touches the other side, so it is mentioned that arrival of the Buddha, torrential rains started pouring, and so that all those decaying corpses are very much like swept away. So the city has become fairly clean because of that torrential rain. And then the atmosphere becomes somewhat purified, and city has become somewhat calm. And now Buddha and the Sangha arrived there. And now an interesting thing happened. Then Buddha delivered this discourse, Ratana Sutta. We can call it as Jewel's Discourse or the Gems Discourse. And that was preached to Venerable Ananda and asked Venerable Ananda to recite the Sutta again and again while spreading some sacred water, taking from the Buddha's alms bowl. It's kind of a ritualistic way of doing, blessing the whole city. So Venerable Ananda learned the Sutta from the Buddha, and now Buddha has given some water filled with to his own alms bowl, and Ananda taking that bowl, sprinkling water, is going all around the city of Vesali and very much chanting this Ratana Sutta. So it seems to be this is the beginning how the Sutta, maybe we can say the chanting, a blessing, a protective chant has become established. So it is coming from the far away. It is not something recently started, but there is something Buddha himself participated and he instructed Venerable Ananda, and people are also participated in that event. And as Buddha and the Sangha arrived Vesali, King Sakka, the god of the king, King Sakka also arrived. So many mighty devas also gathered. So as a result of that, so while they are there, so those evil spirits can't stay there. So they all went away. They ran away. So that plague also has finished. So all those evil spirits have become completely evacuated. Now the city has become fairly protected. On top of that, now with the Venerable Ananda spreading this, sprinkling the holy water, we can say, sacred water from Buddha's bowl. And now the whole thing become fairly peaceful. And then after doing that, Venerable Ananda returned to the assembly hall. Now Buddha and the other rest of the Sangha were gathered there. And now Venerable Ananda arrived at assembly hall. Now after everyone returned, now Buddha again to this whole assembly, now he is reciting the same sutta, Ratana Sutta. So it's very much like Ratana Sutta has become the theme of the whole event. So he taught Ratana Sutta to Venerable Ananda, and he, using the sacred water, spreading, sprinkling, he recited Ratana Sutta again and again. And now after he returned to the assembly hall, to the gathered Sangha and the people, now Buddha himself is reciting the Ratana Sutta. So you can see Ratana Sutta has become one of the icon in the Buddhist history, which is being used to very much as a blessing. When a country or a situation or a village or a kind of a calamity, a plague has happened, so as a blessing, so it has become one of the icon in the Buddha's dispensation. And it is said that it is not only unique to the Gautama Buddha, and even the other Buddhas reciting this Ratana Sutta. And it's a very powerful one. And again, the interesting thing is, so the whole sutta is highlighting the qualities of the triple gems, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. So Buddha's qualities, sublime Buddha's qualities, Dhamma, sublime qualities, and the Sangha's sublime qualities are being explained in very short form, concise form in the Ratana Sutta. So we are trying to go through verse by verse, and some are quite straightforward and some need some explanation, and we'll see how we can explain this and understand some Dhamma from this and get some advantage, some blessing to ourselves, and again take some direction to our practice, and again to develop some faith into Buddha's dispensation. So these are the things that we are trying to do. Because as you know, sometimes the faith is quite interesting, quite important. So as we are continuing our practice, sometimes if we don't have enough faith, we might give it up in between. And when things become harder, very difficult, and certain illness come to us, so probably our mind can become a little bit of wavering, and we think that we can't continue the practice. And we might think probably we can't practice because of whatever the problem. So we might tempt to use that as an excuse. So all these things can happen. Because we know as human beings, so our path is not that easy. And nowadays everyone is facing many different kinds of problems. In Sri Lanka, you know, there are many problems. other countries also, there are many problems. So this is the human realm, the sensual realm. So we can't say that we won't face any kind of a problem. So it's a kind of strengthening our inner qualities so that we can face these problems, so that we can successfully recover from these problems. So that is one of the attribute in the practice, what we call as resilience. How quickly are we able to return back to our normal way of life? So there are many circumstances, there are many instances. Our body might get into trouble, our mind can get into trouble, our loved ones get into trouble, our society can get into trouble. But how quickly can we recover from that trouble and then behave as in the normal way? On such situations, actually, faith is very, very important. Because faith is kind of a lubricant available in the mind, helping us to maintain a very peaceful, sublime kind of environment within the mind. Because sometimes the practice itself can become quite dry. And Buddha has mentioned in certain suttas, like Bhikkhu Passe Sutta. So as you practice Vipassana, what we call as Appanidha Bhavana, Panidhaya Bhavana, Appanidhaya Bhavana, in the that categorization, Vipassana comes as the Appanidhaya Bhava. So there is no any kind of a desire, any kind of a, say, panidi, any kind of a sensual or mundane kind of goal. Rather, the one's proper goal is attaining Nibbana. It's a kind of a supramundane goal. So when you are doing such kind of a meditation, sometimes because of our immaturity, so there could be a little dryness can happen within our mind, and it's quite acceptable. And in, on such situation, Buddha mentioned, okay, you can switch to a Panidhaya Bhavana. That's a kind of a samatha meditation. Kind of a, say, Buddha Anusati, Dhamma Anusati, Sangha Anusati, Metta. Now you again feel quite happy. Again, you feel quite comfortable. Again, you feel quite uplifted. Again, you feel confident. And again, you feel kind of mentally uplifted. So that is necessary, because sometimes as human beings, we can't say we are maintaining, we are able to maintain a perfect state of mind every day because of certain situations happen, whatever the way. So we also can get into various moods, and those moods can become little depressive even. So how are we going to recover from them? How are we going to uplift ourselves? So this Ratana Sutta, in such a way, helping us to deeply understand certain very interesting qualities of the Buddha, deeply understand certain qualities of the Dhamma, deeply understand certain qualities of the Sangha. These things are really touching, and sometimes those are even, while listening, we may connect with it, and we have a lot of trust, faith with the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. So that is one of the aspect that we expect, and that is one of the aspect of the Dhamma as practitioners. When the true teachings, the sublime qualities of the triple gems are being heard, so we become quite connected with it. We also become uplifted. Our minds also become in line with it. Say, for example, when you are, say, developing, practicing the qualities of the Buddha, reflections of the Buddha, Buddha Anusati. So you become quite happy, and your mind become somewhat uplifted, serene, because we are talking about interesting human qualities. So, for example, when you are telling that Buddha has never done an error, any kind of a mistake, any kind of a fault, any flaw in his character, even in secret, this is very, very interesting way of putting things. Because we as human beings sometimes tend to hide our mistakes. And we do certain mistakes. But having a role model, having kind of an example, as a kind of an example, so that is very, very important. So then only we can follow him, then only we can have a kind of an aspiration to which direction that we need to move. So all these things are necessary. Otherwise, it's quite unlikely that we will take a big leap, that we would take a kind of a strength, kind of an enduring type of practice, because things are sometimes troublesome. So reflecting Buddha's qualities, reflecting the qualities of the Dhamma, reflecting the qualities of the Sangha, for very, very important. So let's see what are the things explained in this sutta, going one verse after the other. So it starts like this. Yani da bhutani samagatani bhumma nivaya niva antalikhe sambeva bhuta sumana bhavantu athopi sakkaccha sunantu bhasita. Yani da bhutani samagatani. So whatever beings are gathered here. So maybe they are gathered in the earth or in the sky. So this is addressing not only to the human beings, even to the devas and whoever may be other spirits. So to everyone, now Buddha is addressing. Sambeva bhuta, sumana bhavantu. Whoever have gathered, let them be happy. Indeed be happy. Athopi sakkach sunantu bhasita. So once you are happy, you are comfortable, please listen to me. Please listen to these words. It's a kind of an invitation. Very loving kindness, a cordial atmosphere, a kind of a friendly invitation to everyone. Tasmahi bhuta nisameta sabbe mettam karotha manusya pajaya divacha rattocha haranti ye balin tasmahi ne rakkata appamatta. Tasmahi bhuta nisameta sabbe. Therefore, O beings, all of you listen. Show loving kindness to the human population, humankind. Now, that humankind, actually day and night, bring you certain offerings. Tasmahi ne rakkata appamatta. As a result of that, please, therefore, protect them. Now, you can see sometimes, people are offering certain things to the devas and they have their own rituals and they have their own way of expecting things, asking things. Even today, if you go to a temple, there are certain places within the temple even. People go to certain gods, celestial beings and asking various things. They offer various things. And we as practitioners might feel, I mean, this is not necessary. This could be even disrespect to the Buddha. And we have to have our own strength. We should not expect any kind of external support. So this sometimes also quite factual, quite correct. But on the other hand, we need to understand the mentality of the other people. So if you are quite confident about yourself, if you have your own strength, if you have enough trust and you don't need any kind of external support, good. That is what is kind of, we can say, the unwavering kind of faith. But the vast majority is not like that. So they are having kind of poor mindset, kind of weak mindset, and they expect some kind of an external support, and they offer various things to depending on their various beliefs, and those can be either correct, either true, or sometimes they are simply wrong beliefs. So this is the way of the society. So we can't correct everyone. But we have to have a kind of a flexibility, a kind of an empathy, understanding what is this human for. So we can't say that everyone has to be perfect, should never offer these things, should never visit these places. Everyone should be perfectly Buddhist. So we can't impose this kind of a rule, this kind of a regulation. But rather we need to understand this kind of an imperfect system, imperfect society. And we too probably have done these kind of things. So having such kind of a very flexible understanding, accepting, acceptable, acknowledging kind of mindset is quite necessary, because otherwise we can become quite rude, we can become very dry, and we are very much like imposing onto others and criticizing others, and they become quite very much disturbed because of our critical comments. But if we have kind of a loving heart, accepting heart, accommodating heart, then we can, while we continue our own practice, without much kind of a hesitance, resistance, we can accommodate other human beings as well. That is what very much like here Buddha is mentioning. So there are a vast majority of people, they offer you various things. They have certain trust on you. It is true that you may not be eating these, whatever these human beings are offering. And even today, say for example, if you go to a temple or if you go to a, what we call a devala, a kind of a shrine, and people offer various things. That is how they believe. And they offer these things and maybe someone else even steal it. And later they may even sell it. So that's a different story. But these people have kind of an innocence, innocent kind of a mentality. So they are in a way a little weak. They don't have inner strength. And though, so as a result of that, they are asking for some external help, external support that we need to understand. So Buddha in a way, so highlighting this point, so in a way, asking kind of a support, a kind of a loving kindness to this human population, because the vast majority are not really matured. They don't have their inner strength. They have certain trust on you. They expect some kind of a support from you. Please help them. So this is as a Buddha being a kind of a person who can see the both situations. So devas come and actually pay respect to the Buddha. They come and ask help from the Buddha. They come and ask certain guidance from the Buddha. Not only devas, even the Brahmas come and ask certain guidance and they pay respect to the Buddha. So the Buddha becomes devati deva, brahmati brahma, the supreme teacher. Now he can see the whole situation. So he can see where devas are. He can see where brahmas are. And he can see where humans are. And again, he can see the human potential, where human potential is. A human can go beyond devas. A human can go beyond brahmas. Till that day, very much like quite poor, feeble, they are asking various things, pleading various things from external sources, still because they haven't understood their human potential. So we as human beings also, we need to understand the situation about our fellow human beings, where they are, why they are doing it. And on the other hand, now Buddha is addressing the other non-human beings. Please understand, so this is a kind of a capacity available within these human beings. If they are properly guided, they can even surpass you. If they are properly guided, they can be a rich field for you to accumulate merit. So whenever a good deed is done, so Buddha recommend therefore to the humans, to his followers, okay, pass merits to the devas. It is not only material offerings that these human beings are offering you. So whenever they do something rejoicing, whatever a good thing, a good deed, when they have done, so without any kind of a reservation, so they freely offer it to you. You also can rejoice in their good deed. So you can see a kind of a dialogue that Buddha is building up between the human population and the non-human population. So this is the kind of a way that the human population is supporting you by offering you merits, offering you various other material things, expecting kind of support from you. So please look at them, help them, give them enough support. And now after mentioning such kind of a request, now Buddha starts explaining about the three qualities or the qualities of the three gems. Yankinchi vittang idhava hurangva sagge suvayang ratanang panita nano samang atti tathagatena idampi buddhe ratanang panita etena sacchena suvatti hotu. It's a blessing. Etena sacchena suvatti hotu. So every time, so this last part is repeated after mentioning a particular sublime quality, either from Buddha, Dhamma or Sangha. So Buddha used that as a way of blessing the whole people. Yankinchi vittang idava hurangva. If there is any treasure available here or beyond, either here in this human realm or either in any other celestial realm, sagge suvayam ratanam panita. So in the sublime, in the heavens, no samang ati tathagate. There is nothing which is surpassing or even equal to the tathagata. So that is to the Buddha. Idampi buddhe ratanang panitang etena sacchena suvatti hotu. So this is a sublime quality of the Buddha. This is the sublime gem or jewel of the Buddha. By this truth, may there be safety. So, actually, sometimes it is quite difficult to understand why Buddha becomes so a powerful gem, powerful jewel, till we understand his Dhamma sometimes. So, people have a lot of faith on Buddha superficially. But as we practice, probably, as we start little by little experience his Dhamma within ourselves, then we start appreciating Buddha from a different angle. And he has, as a supreme teacher, a person who has found the path, a person who has done various dedications, done various endeavors as a blessing to the whole humankind, not only the humankind, even to the other celestial and whatever the other forms. So without his appearance, so this whole world is very much in darkness. So they don't know the proper path. They are doing this and that without knowing the proper path, without being able to be free. Again and again coming to the mother's womb. So as we continue the practice only, actually we may start having such kind of unwavering kind of faith. And then only probably we can actually have some kind of an understanding why Buddha is so important. His appearance is so important. His arising is so valuable. Nowadays, actually, Dhamma is widely available and easily one can listen. So sometimes we can't understand or we even forget about the Buddha and we may give priority to the Dhamma, but we may forget about the Buddha. But we need to understand because of the Buddha, the Dhamma was very much revealed to the whole world. Without him, it was not there. So whatever we understand, whatever we practice, and whatever experience we are, say, experiencing, acquainted through our practice, if it is sublime, so none of them are available if Buddha was not appeared in this whole world. So if we have some kind of a gratitude within ourselves to the Buddha, and again having kind of a humble attitude within ourselves. So I am just a student, I am just a follower. Buddha is the one who knows. Buddha is the supreme teacher, I am just a follower. This kind of a humble attitude as followers is extremely important. Because sometimes as we are practicing, probably we might start thinking, okay, I also know the path. Now there is no need of the Buddha. There is no need of a teacher. I now know what to do. So such kind of a mentality can arise within us, thinking that we know everything, I know everything. You don't need to tell me. Now, Buddha is not necessary. The books are available. I can simply refer a book. I can simply practice. So we forget about the Buddha. And we even say, think that any other teacher might tell the same thing. And we might even equal Buddha to another person because of our non-understanding, misunderstanding. So why Buddha is so important? His appearance to the world is so important. So these are something actually as faithful followers we need to understand. So even though at the beginning it becomes somewhat blind faith, later this faith becomes more and more factual. So as we practice, as we thoroughly understand Buddha's teaching, so then we thoroughly have a strong confidence, strong trust about the Buddha. Then only we see the Buddha. So that's why Buddha mentioned, so through Dhamma try to see me. So whatever the respect we do, whatever the veneration we do, whatever the offering we do to the Buddha, there is no point for him. It is not for him. That actually he became the Buddha. Out of compassion for the whole humankind, all beings, he has become a Buddha. So when we are getting the benefit, if we have that kind of a gratitude, if we time to time have our humble attitude, so he is the teacher, he is the master, and I am a follower. So then I become kind of a humble person, an innocent person. Because sometimes our understanding, our way of thinking, our practice even, can make us conceited. Can make us, you know, solemn-minded. But when we are putting ourselves in the proper place, keeping Buddha in the first place, keeping us as the followers, it doesn't mean that we are very much like looking down us or degrading us. Rather, it makes a kind of a heart, which is a kind of flexible heart. So ultimately, what we need to understand is, it is not a person that who is understanding this whole thing. It's certain dhammata, certain qualities, slowly, slowly growing, maturing within us. So in order for these qualities to mature within us, so this kind of a very flexible, faithful, say amiable type of background, environment is very, very useful. So that's why when we start our practice, we offer our life to the Buddha. So then we become very much like no one. So we forget about all our social status, all our degrees and whatever things. And we become very humble, innocent human being. So that way of grounding ourselves is very, very necessary in this spiritual path. So I think today, as a beginning of this sutta, so I think that is enough for today. And we'll get on to the other, say, deep aspects of this sutta, certain qualities that Buddha highlighted in this sutta in the future sessions. So with that, I'd like to conclude the Dhamma sermon. Now we can open the session for questions.
Therwan San and Saminansa, we have 5 questions today.
Right.
The first question is actually based on a Dhamma sermon of the Perth retreat. So it's Dear Bhante, much merits for starting this program after the Australia retreats. We were fortunate to connect online to some of these retreats and appreciate your kindness in conducting the Perth retreat in English. For the Perth retreat, Bhante selected a very interesting sutta, Chanki Sutta, as I recall. My question is regarding the preliminary stages of stream enterer detailed in that Dhamma sermon. Most of us who practice in these programs and retreats would like to know if we are tracking well in the path and striving to achieve some understanding of Dhamma in this life itself. Therefore, focusing on these smaller steps of the preliminary stages of the stream enterer state seems more practical. Maybe it is not appropriate and can be quite harmful for one's practice. Much merits for Bhante's kind explanation. With metta, that's the end of the question.
So, I mean, actually, I have a little doubt. So you are mentioning in this particular question, so there are certain, actually, 7 aspects explained in this state. So is it the one being asked? Shamila, can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So my question is regarding the preliminary stages of the stream enterer detailed in the Dhamma sermon. Most of us who practice in these programs and retreats would like to know if we are tracking well in the path and striving to achieve some understanding of the Dhamma in this life itself.
Yeah, okay. So let me see. I mean, if I properly understand the question, so as we can see from Chanki Sutta, so the 5 methods are highlighted in the traditional way of achieving some understanding. So suppose there is something called truth, and in order to find out the truth, so there are traditional 5 ways of doing it. So we may be implementing one of them or many of them, and that would be our start as well. So those are the 5 methods. Say, first one being the faith. So we faithfully start searching for the truth, looking for a teacher, following a teacher. So the faith-based kind of quest. And then the ruchi. So we have a kind of a desire. So our way of looking at things, our way of thinking about something. So it is with the particular teaching. So we think, okay, the truth would be there. So as a result of that, we are following. So that is what we call the second one, the ruchi. The third one is called anusava. So there are certain traditional teachings available. And those may be coming from oral tradition or certain generation to generation available in the books. So we also start searching them, reading them, memorizing them, thinking that the truth is there. And there is another way. The fourth one is called akara parivitakka, where we do kind of inner reflection, kind of reasoning within ourselves, and then we can come to a kind of a conclusion. So that is another way. And the last one is called Ditthi Nidhyana Khanti, where already established views are there, and we also ponder to some of them, and then we select, okay, this one is correct. So we come to a kind of a conclusion. So these are the traditional methods that Buddha mentioned available for us to sort of get into in search of truth. But still we haven't come across the truth. We haven't determined or properly arrived the truth. So proper arrival of the truth is called Satchanubodha. And so that is where the where one becomes a Sotapanna, stream winner. So till that he is looking to different paths, to approaching different teachers, practicing many different ways, because he hasn't yet arrived the truth. But now, after one becomes a Sotapanna only, we can say, okay, he now properly selected the path, properly understood the path. Okay, this is the path I need to follow. I don't need to look at everything else. Okay, this is the path I need to follow. So he's clearly clear about it. So on another thing I need to highlight is, so apart from these five methods, so Buddha has taught another one. So that is the experiential knowledge based upon our own inner reflection. So at that very moment, at this very moment, what is happening within our mind? So that is what I highlighted maybe in the fourth or fifth sermon of that Perth retreat. So apart from those five methods, so Buddha mentioned to the monks, so when you are knowing within yourself, at this very moment, in your mind, is there any kind of symptoms of raga, dosa, moha, hatred, greed, hatred, delusion? If you know the availability of raga, dosa, moha, or non-availability of raga, dosa, moha, as a result of direct exploration within your mind, inner reflection within your mind, now Buddha question from the Sangha, is it comes under the faith? Is it comes under the ruchi? Is it comes under anusava? Is it comes under akara parivitakka? Or is it comes under dittinijjhanakkanti? Or is it comes under the direct experience? So the monks say, so it is coming under the direct experience. So this is what Buddha highlighted and he emphasized. Okay, now you got to keep in trust in this method, not merely on the previous five methods, but apart from those five methods, now you have your own direct experience. For yourself, you know. Directly, you know. So that is why even the certain sutta that I highlighted in the series, that Kosambi Sutta, that there are four monks who are discussing certain deep dhamma. So the very question highlighted these five methods, and they clearly mentioned, apart from these five methods, do you have your own understanding? Do you have your direct understanding that bhava nirodho nibbana, that say not coming to any kind of a prepared mental state is the nibbana? So do you have any direct knowledge about it? So you can see, so in that particular Kosambi Sutta, so the question is clearly indicating these five methods, and then he, keeping it aside, asking the question, okay, apart from these five methods, do you have direct knowledge about this? So till we have, I mean, if we don't have such thing, then probably we are still in search of the truth. So once we are confirmed about it, once we have confident about it, once we know for directly on our own, yes, now I know, I have seen within myself. So that is the point we can say, okay, fairly, I might have arrived the truth. Now in order to verify whether I have arrived the truth, so Buddha has given a criterion. That is also mentioned in another sutta named as Kosambi Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So seven criterions are mentioned there. So that is, I mean, explained in the series. So I invite all of you to listen to that series. Very interesting Dhamma discussion is there in the Chanki Sutta. And so I invite all of you to listen to that. And appreciate your question as well.
Question number 2 of 6. This is a mindful sitting question. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing 5 to 6 years and participated in multiple retreats. Due to the changes of my job during COVID, I could not find any time for regular sitting and walking during the last 2 years. I seem to have lost the touch of regular practice and especially 1 hour sitting due to the day-to-day struggles. Therefore, I try to focus on being mindful on thoughts based on Bhante's teachings. However, this seems not yielding focus full on practice, but kind of up and down experience. Awareness, distraction, awareness. Appreciate Bhante's advice if I could go back to mindfulness on bodily phenomena somehow and start from the beginning, which will not be practical most of the days. Or should I hang on with being mindful on thoughts and expect the current light touch of awareness to improve with continuous practice? That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Actually, one warning that Buddha mentioned in the Anapanasati Sutta is that if you are trying Chittanupassana without clear comprehension, without proper mindfulness, so then it can lead to some sort of, say, driven by defilements. So you won't be able to step back and watch them objectively. Time to time, you're being carried away by these defilements, carried away by these different thoughts. So it can happen like that. So in your this question, to some extent, so that is indicated where, say, time to time you're being carried away. So at that time, actually, I mean, what is necessary is a kind of a more straightforward practice. That is Kaya Anupassana, we can say. So, I mean, if possible, try to find a time, maybe a simple walk, so that you establish mindfulness in this mindful walking. Say, while you are working also, time to time, assume that you are using a computer. Say, time to time, you are coming back to your posture. You simply close your eyes or stop your work for a moment and establishing mindfulness within your posture. Take a long breath, deep breath, and then very much like recognizing your posture, recognizing that particular breath. So at that time, actually, you are cutting off the ongoing story in the mind. So the work or whatever the other assignment that we are engaged with can create a lot of tension within the mind and can create a story within the mind. So we are being drifted from the present moment. We are living in a mind-made state. So that is again reset. We are again grounded or earthed because of this kind of a intermittent type of practice. So therefore, even to the people whoever are using computers, typically it is recommended after half an hour, each half an hour, you are grounding yourself, earthing yourself, coming back to your senses. So likewise, at least if you can ground yourself and establish mindfulness, so that is necessary. Otherwise, I mean, without much of established mindfulness, directly trying to look at the mind and, you know, confront each and every thought would be quite difficult.
Question number 3 of 6 is a general question. Dear Bhante, apology if this question is not appropriate and I remain at your disposal. Can one be aware of the mind workings, ponder and scrutinize to understand the drivers beneath and complete yoniso manasikara to realize the truth without years of practice? With metta, that's
can
the end
repeat?
Of the question.
Yeah, please, can you repeat?
So it says apology if this question is not appropriate. And the question is, can one be aware of the mind workings, ponder and scrutinize to understand the drivers beneath and complete yoniso manasikara to realize the truth without years of practice? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yes. Actually, it depends on the person's caliber. So we don't know. Actually, we need to understand first, so this is not our first life. And this may not be our first endurance also. This is not our first endeavor also. And there may be situations that we have practiced many years in the past lives, and we were good practitioners in our past lives. On such situation, actually, when you are coming across the teaching, this life, so immediately, I mean, you sort of become more familiar with it. So your mind properly adjusts, properly align with it. That's why, I mean, what has happened to Venerable Sariputta, so being Upatissa, so he approached Venerable Assaji, and so he is asking, sort of inviting Venerable Assaji to deliver a Dhamma sermon. Venerable Assaji say, okay, I don't know much, and I can't explain in detail. And then Venerable Sariputta, so rather this Upatissa, so he says, okay, I am capable of understanding it in detail, so please explain me in short. I can understand it in detail. So you can see the sort of capacity Upatissa had. And then Venerable Assaji actually delivered a sermon very much like a gist of the Dhamma. Ye Dhamma hetu pabhava te sang hetun tathagato vaha. So this is the gist of the Dhamma, so where Venerable Assaji is delivering. So at that moment, Venerable Sariputta was able to penetrate that whole teaching. So this is because he has practiced for many, many lifetimes. So just before this lifespan, so he was very much like practicing as a human being, as a Brahma and whatever the way. So many, many lifetimes, he was practicing the teaching. But he had a kind of a determination, okay, I have to become the main disciple of to a Buddha. And for example, he has been a Sarada Tapasa, a hermit called Sarada. And he was the teacher. He had many followers during the previous Buddha's time. And so he became quite faithful about the Buddha and approached with his followers to that particular Buddha. And now that Buddha, I can't remember that Buddha's name. So he was preaching Dhamma. All his followers, I mean, his students attained. His students became arahants. But this hermit Sarada couldn't attain because he was not capable, but he had a determination. He had a determination that I want to become a first disciple of a future Buddha. And he was interested about, in that occasion, about the first disciple of that previous Buddha. And he was aspiring to become that person. So even that lifespan, so he had that capacity. And that capacity is not lost. Now he is taking that capacity to this present life. Now under this Buddha's dispensation, the Gautama Buddha's dispensation, when he hears Dhamma, so it is, he has that capacity to penetrate the Dhamma, immediately understand it. So therefore, so different people have such rare capacities. So we can't say, I mean, we have those capacities immediately. If we have, that is good. But if you don't have, but still the opportunities are available to explore Dhamma, to learn Dhamma, to practice Dhamma as much as possible, then slowly, slowly, one becomes capable of understanding the Dhamma. So putting everyone in the same level is not possible. So that is why sometimes it is kind of a categorization of different personalities are explained. Four categorizations. Can't remember the names now. So there is a person with a very short sermon, he can understand. There's another person, once a descriptive sermon is given, he can understand. Another person, a descriptive sermon and years of practice, he can understand. Another person, even with practice, even with descriptive sermon, he can't understand in this life. But he may can understand in the future. So likewise, there are categorizations coming into certain personalities. So we are sort of not in the same level. So we need to admit our different capacities within ourselves.
But there are three more questions, but we have actually come to the time has elapsed. Can we continue?
Yeah, we can continue. Today, actually, I have some time.
Okay. Question number 4 of 6. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, when we recite the Ratana Sutta and not only think about the meanings, just even hearing the Pali words, we get elated and happy. What is this quality in our mind or heart, Bhante, with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that's why I think the Pali language itself has that sort of an appealing quality. It's a very pleasant language. And some of us might have a certain previous connection with it. As I just mentioned, it is not our first birth. It is not our first encounter of the Dhamma. Some of us might have already recited these things in our previous lives. We have associated Dhamma to some extent, but we couldn't fulfill that. We couldn't sort of say became Arahant. So we are again and again coming to the birth. But when these are again and again heard, so we have the faith about the Buddha, about his teaching. So we have certain inclination towards the spiritual qualities. Then the Pali language become more appealing, more addressing to our mind. So this is something that many people are sharing. And sometimes when we are talking it in English or talking it in Sinhala, does not really touch our heart. But even though we can't understand each and every word in Pali, but when we are hearing it, it is touching our heart. Something that is available. And another option is that probably you are coming from the heavenly realm. And I heard they are talking in Pali. Probably you can put it in that way as well.
Question number 5 of 6. Again, a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, how do I know there are other non-human-like devas in existence? Is there any evidence or trust because Buddha said, I thought there is no heaven or gods in Buddhism and one has to seek one's own salvation as we are the owners of our karmas. How can we then rely on gods or devas to relieve our suffering? Please explain. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's the end of the question.
That's what I mentioned. So different people are with different levels of understanding and so we can't expect the devas will make us complete salvation, complete freedom, complete liberation that they can achieve within us. That's a wrong misunderstanding. So that's why rituals and observances merely would achieve liberation is a what we call as a silabbata paramasa. And but keeping in trust with one's own practice and developing necessary qualities and maintaining proper sila, samadhi, panya. So that would be the path. When we are talking about the proper understanding, proper liberation. But on the other hand, the availability of the devas is something very well explained in the Dhamma. So we don't need to reject that. Now there are many suttas Buddha delivered to devas. It's available in the Digha Nikaya, available in the Majjhima Nikaya, available in the Sanghita Nikaya, available in the Anguttara Nikaya. There are many, many instances that Buddha preaching Dhamma to the devas. So don't think that we are the only ones available in this whole world. But there are many beings available, but we can't see them. That is something we need to understand in a way, in a humble way. Our whatever the human-made instruments, our own eyes have very limited capacity. And we can see only very limited narrow range. Beyond that narrow range, we can't see. But there are many other beings who are available, but we can't see. And on the other hand, now if you refer Samyutta Nikaya, now there are Devata Samyutta, and there is Devaputta Samyutta. Many suttas are accumulated there. There are many certain devas coming in the midnight to meet the Buddha, to get a instruction from the Buddha and have a little short discussion with the Buddha. So many, many instances are there. Various names are there. And God Sakka himself, he arrived at the Buddha and he first sent his pretty much like assistance, what we call Panchasika. And he himself tried to make Buddha happy. And then God Sakka is arriving and he is asking questions, what we call as a Sakka Pancha Sutta. So there are many instances. Sakka, we can say the leader of the three realms. So he approaching the Buddha and asking various questions. And there are many other instances how Venerable Moggallana going to the heavenly realms and, making certain interviews with certain devas. So these things are admitted, accepted, and properly, listed in the canon. So therefore, I don't admit that we are the only ones available. Rather, the other beings are also available. Yeah, back to you, Chamila.
Yes, question number 6. This again regarding the Dhamma Sermon. Thank you, Bhante, for explaining that many humans need psychological support from a higher deity in terms of distress. Praying and chanting is very appropriate. However, do you think it is appropriate to... Is it appropriate to... to ask for huge, do you think it's appropriate to offer pujas to deities and ask for huge blessing?
Benefit.
Yes, blessing in return. Isn't that in essence a form of bribery or vanchanika dhamma?
Yes,
that's
definitely.
Another question.
So that's very understood. So that's what I mentioned. So that is the, that's why I mean, first of all, explaining the sutta, that's why I mentioned. So different people are at different levels. So we can't expect everyone to have their own trust, have their own confidence and not going to these kind of external sources and asking whatever the help. I mean, if everybody can do it, well and good. But we can't impose that onto the others. So when you properly understand slowly, slowly Dhamma, then only you are, understanding, okay, these things are now not necessary. I don't need to pay respect to these, whatever the deities. I don't need to trust them. Now I have my inner strength. I am now in trust with the Buddha. I am now in trust with the Dhamma. Now I am trust with the Sangha. Now I don't need any external help. And when I am practicing Dhamma, when I am properly living, they will help me as a sort of a gesture, as a way of a blessing. It is not that I am asking for some kind of a help, but when one becomes a proper human being, a good human being, the blessing may come automatically. So in order to come to that kind of understanding, it will take time. So we can't therefore expect everybody to have that understanding immediately. So that's why we need to understand different mentalities. So as you mentioned in the very beginning of the question, so certain weak personalities, so they ask certain external sources to help them. And they believe it. And when something go correct, okay, they attribute it to that particular source. And they think, okay, because of him, I become sort of recovered. Because of their support, I was recovered. So this way of, you know, thinking. But in proper sense, we, as we are maturing in Dhamma, so slowly, slowly, you are abandoning all these rituals, all these observances, and you start trusting yourself. And that's why Buddha, even though he is the supreme teacher, he didn't want us to be bounded to him. So that is his supremacy. So sometimes when a teacher is available, he always expects kind of a veneration, he always expects some kind of a dependency from his followers. But Buddha says, don't think that I am expecting such kind of a dependency from you. Don't expect that I always want your kind of reservation, your respect, thinking that the whole thing depends on me. So I have done my part. There is no any kind of a teacher's fist into the Dhamma. I have explained the Dhamma openly. The teaching is available. So don't expect further anything from me. Everything is mentioned. Everything is preached. So you now have to have trust in you. You now have to keep an island unto you. So Buddha is keeping the whole responsibility to us. I mean, in order to come to that kind of a maturity, it will take time. So till that, okay, understanding the others are having that kind of a, you know, a little weak mentality is something that we can understand. It's something more human. Then only we can become more sympathetic. We can become more compassionate. We can spread loving kindness to the others. Because we understood, okay, I also was there. I haven't born as a perfect human being. Even now I am not a perfect human being. I also, say, practice certain, say, rituals. No point, no problem of admitting that. It is not a, I don't think it's a kind of a thing to be ashamed. We understanding, okay, I went through these kind of wrong things. I done these kinds of faults. I also did mistakes. I also followed these kind of beliefs. But now, okay, after going through the practice, now I have more faith on the Buddha, faith on Dhamma, faith on Sangha. Slowly, slowly, I am maturing myself. So that way of understanding is much better.
Thank you, Bhante. So that is the end of the Q&A session.